Blog Talk
really?
Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
I had a technical situation there. Somehow there was something going on with the mic here. But due to engineering, we were able to get that rectified. So welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. Thank you for taking the time out to tune in to Progressive News Weekly. And that bumper tune, how apropos, the one and only iconic Mr. Bob Marley singing Wake Up and Live. Yes, how apropos for this evening's program. Of course, every week that's sort of an apropos theme because that's what we're about, waking up and living your highest and your best life for you and your loved ones. And this evening, we're going to apply that to a specific topic, which I have a suspicion most of you know, even if you're not on the mail list, because there's so much going on right now, all centered around situation in our society, not just locally, not just nationally, but internationally. And it's not the first time that we've gone through this go-round, and it probably won't be the last. And with that, I just want to wish everyone out there safe ventures. We'll talk more about that. Pray everyone is well, you and your families going around. Of course, here on Progressive News Weekly, we're going to bring you information that is not impacted or influenced by business or political or commercial interests. So when you're getting information here, it is unadulterated for sure. Straight no chaser again. We appreciate the calls, the emails. Continue to send them. Give us your suggestions and ideas of programs and our guests that we can bring to the airwaves, especially those that are not hitting mainstream. And if they are, am I referring to when I talk about that thing? Yeah, we have a pandemic officially in the United States. It's official. And regardless of the station that you're tuning into, whether it's left or right, you're getting a similar message. It's interesting how challenging times kind of blur the line somewhat, the lines of indifference. It sort of reminds you of the movie Independence Day. You know, you see folks trying to come together. So put aside the political differences and ideologies, and let's come into one common mindset. And this, too, is influenced by energy. In fact, it's not just really influenced by energy, because I can speak to this audience freely. You're well-educated. If you're tuning in now, you get it, what I'm about to say. But this, too, has at its core energy. So with that said, regardless of what you subscribe to spiritually, I suggest that you spend some significant time with that in these moments and days and weeks ahead, power in that, because this is all about energy, folks. That doesn't mean that you don't want to take some physical and mental action around this. It's just to say that this is about energy, which it is at its core. So this virus, this coronavirus, speaking about at its core, originating in China, speaking of energy again, there's more to it than just the product itself. The surfacing of a virus. See, there's so much more. If you really step back and see what it's bringing with it an awareness, a heightened awareness. And just as sure as the waves will ebb and flow, so will the energy. No matter what, no matter who's in, this isn't about politics and who's in office. This is about a higher authority. what Dick Gregory, my mentor, would say, the universal God. Now, you might call it Allah or Buddha or Messiah or Jesus, in my case, God. But there is that universal supreme being that's always in charge. So now we're finding out that our prescriptions in the United States have been coming from China. And I've been doing my little empirical study, because that's what I do, one of my favorite things, just kind of sidebarring. And so far, the statistics are quite compelling. I've not met a person that realized that. And I'm not talking about a large sample of 1,000. Yeah, I'm not talking about small either, 3 or 4. But of the 50 or so people that I've spoken with, not one. No, not one. Bible, gospel, just came to mind. So there's a heightened awareness. And we've been talking about this for 8 years. So as I've said so many times on air, and if you go back in the archives, it's not many weeks go by, I don't mention it, the seat you're sitting in is stamped somewhere made in China. So when I say left wing, right wing, same bird, you can say, wow, was that a Republican thing or was that a Democratic thing? Or was it just a thing of politics? Because this country's been bought and sold, folks. And I'm not being negative. It's not a done deal, because at the end of the day, it's a government I wouldn't want to be anywhere else at this point, from my understanding and my knowledge of the world. Because it is for the people, by the people, and of the people. And if nothing else, express yourself. There's an energy. There's that word again that goes with it. So as you're out in the supermarkets, in the post office, in the banks, and all those other places, those public places, which you may be going to less and less with what's happening, you're tuning in, and you're hearing people say, yeah, you know, that's, how could that be? And, you know, I'm really sick of things. You know, everything is China. So if 80% of the product and the goods, yeah, it's getting there too, China, China's an authoritative country, which we supposedly don't subscribe to. As my homeboy, Arsenio Hall, would say, makes you go, So the Russians, who we're supposed to have major differences with, is our only source of getting our astronauts into space, then you have to step back and go, Folks, your politicians are not serving you. I say your politicians, tongue in cheek, because I know there are a lot of listeners that you get it. It's not about lesser of two evils. It really is not two evils. You jump off the cliff or you jump off the bridge. You don't have to jump off either. You know, you have a choice. So I'm just saying all that because at the end of the day, here's this word again, it's about energy. If it's not something that you subscribe to, now that you are more aware, because I do believe most folks were aware, there was a sense of apathy because we would just go on in a lockstep. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not pointing fingers here. There's a big thumb looking back at me. Oh, here it is. There it is, looking, coming right back at me. So, yeah, I wasn't on my soapbox on the corners, although on this particular venue, I have spoke freely about that. But it's time that we really make some demands. I mean, we really, when you say demands, who are we to demand? Well, it's about the energy. Just say it. Just putting it out there in voice. I demand there be a change. But we see now we got to be careful. Because the last thing that came out in the last week is, and in case you didn't hear it, and I'll try to get the quote up if I can, that leader in China, the one who has placed himself in perpetuality. I'm college educated. I made that up. But it means forever. The leader of China has declared, you all better be cool. And this is ad-libbing. But I have the quote. I'm trying to find it. If I can't, I'll make sure I'll be ready next week with the actual quote. And I'm not sure if it's the prime minister, but it's the leader who's declared himself forever the leader until he's passes on or somebody takes him out or whatever happens that, you know, causes him to not be able position. And he has declared that this rhetoric. Remember what he did when the NBA, was it LeBron, another one of my state homeboys, came out and said, wait a minute now, you know, we're opposed to some of the things that you're doing, China. And then China said, I tell you what, you all want to keep having basketball games over here. You all want us to still continue to promote. And the NBA apologized for speaking the truth, mind you. So, folks, we need to wake up. I stepped back on the NBA after that, frankly, and I love basketball, but I just, you know, I watch my college sports. Is your hair raising on its end like mine is just talking about this? So the energy of this is, folks, like we used to do 8 years ago when I was airing my first couple of years on air, we used to call it Mouse Warriors because at that time it wasn't about everyone having a laptop. You know, most people had the little mouse that you moved around. You didn't have the touchpad. So we called them Mouse Warriors, and we would get on the computers, and we would send things to our, you know, local politicians and to others of our network and just say, hey, this is the movement. We're not buying GMO, and we would just do that. So here is the movement this time. You know, Gil Scott-Heron, the revolution will not be televised. It will be live. Here's the deal. Our energy we're putting forth is, this is in the last 6 days. Look it up. What does China have to say about potentially stopping exporting to us prescription meds? They actually put a statement. What if we stop sending you prescription meds? Now, with many people depending on prescription meds to even live, because after so long, you know, you're taking so many meds. I have clients who are taking upwards of 8 different, and I know some that are taking as many as 10, 15, and no lie. So, you're to an extent living off of meds. If you don't take them, your blood pressure skyrockets. I've seen it. You go into a state of shock and you could die. So when you have a ruler, leader, if I can use that term loosely, of a country is saying, I'll cut it off. I'll stop sending your medicines over there. That's a threat. That's almost an act of war. Especially if 80%, and I've heard that number, and I think it may be low, of certain prescriptions are coming from there, ones that sustain the lives of our citizens, and they make a public statement like that. I've not yet heard an apology for it or a clarification. So he's standing, doubling down on what he said. So now we're standing around. Like, oh, wow, about his short hairs, if, you know, that's an adult term. So, energy, folks, we got to keep it real. We got to just start putting it out that, okay, we need a change, a major change. Bring back manufacturing. Say what you will about, you know, politicians. But again, now we got to be careful because we're not going to, on a dime, produce these things ourselves. So are we going to be in a cold war with a country that produces 80% of our products? This was not a right-wing issue, folks, Republican. This was not a left-wing issue, Democrat. It was both. Now, we can go back and do our little homework on it. Okay, who was it that first went into China? Well, if you Google that, you're going to find any takers out there. You can press 1 on your dial. who was the first president that I say, and back at that time, when I first saw that, I was studying economics, I'll never forget it, and it kind of scared me in a sense. I was like, what? Wait a minute, aren't these people communists? What is he doing? I talked to my professor. I was like, this is a good thing? Flag went up for me and about it ever since. And I don't even want to say how many decades ago that was. Yep, that was a Republican president. I'll give you a hint. But since then, we've had two Democratic presidents double down on that to make it virtual law. It's an act passed in Congress that's who's going to be our primary trade partner that's going to produce our goods. Yeah, he's this and she's that and that. They're selected. That's my conspiracy theory. They're selected. They're not elected. They're selected. And they decide who is going to be in office for the first given term. I know it's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow. The only thing I can tell you is do your homework. Do some research. And if you're going to look on the news, mercy on you, just CNN. You just jump off the bridge, folks. If you're going to just tune into one station, just jump off the bridge. Take every one in your family, your loved ones, take them all with you. Because you're not going to get a true picture. It's not many days that go by. I don't talk to someone that is not totally brainwashed because all they do is keep their network on one of the Fox channels or right-wing channels or on the left wing. And I got to hear this spew about how the Democrats, they're just crazy, or I got to hear these Republicans, they're the worst thing. Buying any of it. I'm not going for it. It's not happening. So, this evening, I've got on my soapbox, I guess I've offended all the politicians I possibly could have. All right, I'm back. So as I was saying, don't careful of your sources of information, folks. You don't want to just willy-nilly go down one source of information and left wing, right wing. You know what's going on now with our prescriptions is horrific because most people did not realize that. And higher than that for certain prescriptions, are brought to us to the same ideals that we do. So where did that come from? Was that a left-wing thing or a right-wing thing? No. Google, do your history. Do your fact check. So it's incumbent upon us to be educated. And it's about energy, speaking truth. When you're in the supermarket or in the back of the fence or down the hallway with the neighbor and in the supermarket and the banks and we're at post office, wherever you are, just to kind of get that buzz. Now, you may say, well, that's not going to make a difference. You'd be surprised because there's an energy that's associated with it. And there are people buzzing about this right now. So there's a positive thing to what's happening with this scourge that's happening right now. And it's a sense of awareness, and it's a sense of increased responsibility, like simply washing our hands. Isn't that it? Isn't that novel? Wash your hands. Really? It's true. How many times have you gone to the movie theater and stepped out the restroom afterwards and around and people just do what they do and walk out the door? I know I see it a lot. So there are some things that this situation is going to bring about in terms of awareness that are good. Speaking of awareness, I have with us this evening, and I know so many who are tuned in and get my weekly announcements. You've been waiting, and I see the numbers jumping up here. By the way, if you have a comment, we always encourage you. We want to hear your voices. 347-838-9142. And if you have dialed that number, you'll just press 1 on your dial, and myself or our engineer will put you in the back. Express yourself. This is all good. This is just good, stimulating discourse. No wrong or right comments. And of course, we keep it clean. It's a family show. But I have a special treat for you, because this evening, we have a special guest. And many of you who've been with me over the years, these 10 years, well, and you saw the announcement, you've already said, whoa, you know what, it's been a while. Yes, 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 I admit it has been a while. But this person, even though we haven't had an opportunity, that special opportunity to have the discourse that we used to have as frequent, she hasn't stopped in her crusade. And we've talked from time to time. So she's been there doing what she does all along. And, of course, I'm referring to Miss Barbara Lowe Fisher. Yes, 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 yes. Hand clapping, I hear it. Yes. And she is talking the talk, and she's walking the walk, as she always has. And I suspect always will. Speaking truth to power, not trying to convince anyone, but just simply bringing information and encouraging you to make an informed educated decision in whatever it is that you're doing. Truly, and I mean that, it's truly my pleasure this evening, and I'm committed myself. Some people say I need to be committed, but laughter is good, folks. Builds the immune system. But truly, I am committed to seeing that we have Barbara back with us more frequently, and because she has so much to offer. So with that said, Ms. Barbara Lowe Fisher, co-founder,
hello,
president of the National Information, National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC, author of numerous books, humanitarian. I can go on and on. Thank you for taking the time out, Barbara, to join us again.
Well, I'm very happy to be here under this incredible situation that we are seeing in the USA. Unprecedented.
Unprecedented. You're absolutely correct with that. Where do I start? Well, how about with, they've declared it a pandemic. This scourge called the coronavirus, and you know they're saying that you know we're here in America, in terms of those who are affected, but we're far, far beyond that, of course, because there's not much testing that's going on. So before I get into a specific line of questioning, I'm just going to hand the mic over to you and ask you to give us, you know, your vision of what's happened and maybe what's happening, and then we'll get into where this may go.
Well, I think that it's important to put it into perspective. I was checking the statistics tonight. 124,000 reported cases globally of this mutated coronavirus called COVID-19. About 4,500 deaths globally. In this country, we have 39 deaths in the United States as of March 12th, and in Italy, over 1,000 or around 1,000. It looks like the situation in Italy is much more serious in terms of the kind of disease they're seeing over there than we have here. But I find it almost surreal when you see the reaction. 239 deaths in this country, where we are in a situation where we're seeing not only a collapse of our economy and on the stock market, and it's not just our economy, it's globally, but we're seeing drastic measures being taken to shut down parts of society. We see the National Guard having been called out in Westchester County of New York. There's some talk, I think, by the mayor of New York of closing. I think Broadway has been closed down. In other words, the messaging that we're receiving right now is preparations for unprecedented measures to lock people down into their homes or, you know, cancel large events. I know something called March Madness, I believe it's basketball. Tournaments have been canceled. Schools are being closed. Colleges are being closed. I think the president has just said that, you know, most flights coming out of Europe, with the exception of Ireland and England, are being canceled coming into this country. It's really wreaking havoc on the entire country. And I think, you know, we do have to ask the question, is the response balanced? Is it in proportion to the threat? There was a paper published recently by Fauci and in a medical journal, and stating that basically, even though there have been some estimates of a death rate of 3.4%, that it's really more like 1% and perhaps less than 1%, more like a severe influenza. And every year, if you've followed this issue, you know that the CDC says that there's between 36,000 and, I don't know, 60,000 deaths a year, depending upon the flu season. If you go to the deaths and mortality statistics on the CDC's website, they list about 55,000 deaths from influenza and pneumonia in 2018. So step back, there are questions to be asked about whether this response is in proportion to the threat as we know it right now.
You make a very good point, because I was just yesterday, was this Thursday? It may have been a day before, just doing some statistics as you, and saying, okay, at 36,000, and I took the low ball number, you know, at 36,000, you know, that's simple math. It's amazing sort of the way that it pans out. And so as you break it down, so, you know, that's 18,000 for 6 months, 9,000 for 3 months, and what we're talking about, if it's 9,000 for 3 months, if my math serves me right, is that not 1,000 people a month? I mean,
yes,
I'm asking seriously, Barbara. I'm really asking: is that, if it's 36,000 and that's in the U.S., is that
right?
Not? And I'm not being rhetorical. Am I doing something wrong? I really want to know, because you're the expert in terms of statistics of this. Is that kind of the number that we're talking about, that they're saying die on average?
Well, that's what their lowball number is for annual deaths from influenza. Now,
3,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if you want to divide it up, I'm sure that in some months during the flu season, it may be higher, but it does average out if you take 36,000 divided by 12.
I'm just saying average. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you said, you got a question. You have to, if anyone even stepped back and just thought about that number. Now, I get the percentages, because I think that's where they're talking about, well, that's at 1%, and this is at 3%. So at that rate, this thing is just going to explode, which is why I think they're justifying all of these drastic measures. Is that what your thought is?
Yes. I mean, I think certainly they have been saying that it's going to get worse, and that we're, you know, the thing that bothers me about in watching, because I very closely every day watch this rollout of the response since in earnest, probably since the beginning of February, even though they knew about it and they were talking about it in January, it was really still confined mostly to China. Almost all of the deaths worldwide occurred in China, but of course now they're coming. We're seeing deaths in Italy and other Iran and other places. Is that here we are in the United States of America with the most well-funded and wealth in the world, literally, more money, poured into it than any other country in the world. And I do not understand, and I think it's a legitimate question that really needs to be investigated after this is all over. Why, for 2.5 months, has this Department of Health and Human Services not been able to test Americans? It is completely unacceptable. It doesn't make any sense when you look at it straight out. They're still not testing in great numbers. Now, there have been statements by the health authorities that there are a lot of asymptomatic and mild cases of coronavirus, of this COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
The more cases that are mild or asymptomatic relative to deaths, the lower the death rate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not testing and you don't really know how many people have it, you're not able to accurately make a mortality estimate. And so I don't understand why there still is this dragging of feet, it appears, to test large numbers of people. There also have been multiple reports in the media that planes coming in from countries like Italy, and these reports are this week as well, but all along, planes that are coming in from places where there has been this COVID-19, the people that are getting off of the planes are not being tested. They're not being screened. They're just getting off the planes. I don't understand if we're entering a national lockdown situation, why has there not been a greater effort to test people and to screen people when they come into our country from countries that have this virus? What possible explanation is there?
Well, now we get into the conspiracies. And I didn't say conspiracy theory. See, there's a huge difference, as you know, Barbara, between a conspiracy theory and just a plain old conspiracy. Because it's an insult when, as you said, you're seeing 36,000 to 60,000 and documented some years. And at this point, and I'm not poo-pooing that it's not possible and that this isn't a very serious disease, virus that's going around. At this point, we're at 39 up from, and granted, that's a significant leap because, as you said, a month ago, that number may have been 3. And so it's at that rate, if it were to continue. But I think it'll be interesting, as I believe you said, Byron, the next week to 2 weeks, what happens since they've taken some action. But the inaction is the thing that almost makes you scratch your head, which makes you wonder, okay, well let's take this. This was first identified supposedly in January, but there was information enough such that our leaders or our leader declared, okay, this is an emergency situation. We're going to begin holding back on receiving certain flights from certain areas. It was significant enough. And I would dare say that looking all the way back, because I guess this thing, if you do some of the research, you're finding that this Wuhan thing kind of started. Was it like October, November, somewhere in there?
Well,
you probably have
saying,
a better handle on that.
Yeah, officially they're saying December. That was when there were several medical workers, doctors in Wuhan who started to talk about it and were actually reprimanded and punished by the government in China for talking about this, what they said was a new SARS-like virus. And, of course, MERS and SARS are related to this virus, but this is much less serious than MERS or SARS. And so it was at least December that it was officially acknowledged to be spreading in China. And so here we've had January, February, we're now into March. There's been plenty of time for this country to prepare, for this public health infrastructure to prepare. There's been a lot of confusion about the origin of the virus. And certainly in January, there were a lot of different theories discussed as to what the origin. There still is not, they really do not know exactly how this virus, where it originated. And there's been a lot of calls for censorship, really, not just in China, about abilities of where this coronavirus came from, this mutated coronavirus. And there have been calls for censorship here as well, because they say that when people talk about potential theories as to where it came from, that this just frightens everybody and that it's false news. I say we really do need to, especially scientifically, we need to find out. We have the tools to find out. They can do the genetic analysis. And we need to find out really where this originated, what it really is. It, certainly you have to know that in order to make a vaccine, because they're fast-tracking vaccines to market, bypassing ordinary standards for proof of safety and effectiveness when you fast-track. And so a lot more needs to be known. I mean, if you open up any, even from coming from official sources, a lot of officials are saying there's a lot that's not known about this virus. So there have been some theories about it could have been an accident where researchers were creating bioweapons or they were just simply researching coronavirus and somehow it escaped. Right now, the World Health Organization and the CDC maintain that this came from bats. There may have been an intermediary animal that it got into and then created this strange mutated coronavirus that's far more infective and more has more complications than the cold virus, because cold virus is the coronavirus. So, and this may be explain also why we're seeing different strains potentially, and where you see a much higher death rate in Italy than you're seeing here, at least so far. What I found very interesting when I was doing my research in January was that there was a simulated coronavirus pandemic exercise that was held in October 2019 at Johns Hopkins University Health Center for Health Security in partnership with the World Economic Forum and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation hosted an event called Event 201 on October 18, 2019 in New York City. It was a high-level simulated coronavirus pandemic exercise, and they invited a lot of health officials from around the world, businessmen, journalists, and what that event was that the participants were dropped into the middle of an uncontrolled novel coronavirus outbreak that was spreading like wildfire in South America and causing worldwide havoc. And there was a real emphasis on the free fall of the global economy and the shutting down of trade and travel. And there was a simulation of all these rumors and misinformation, governments collapsing and citizens were revolting. And so this simulated pandemic exercise, I find it very interesting that preceded by 3 months actually a real coronavirus outbreak, a strange mutated coronavirus outbreak. And immediately, of course, when they started to report in January that there was this novel coronavirus in China, the very first thing that was done was talk about creating a vaccine for it. And indeed, NIH had been working with Moderna, which is a drug company, using a new messenger RNA technology to develop coronavirus vaccine. And this messenger RNA technology has not been licensed by the FDA. So it still is been in experimental, still an experimental technology, and they have been trying to develop vaccines for SARS and for respiratory syncytial virus. But it's a new technology that we've never used before, and now they're talking about bypassing animal studies and going directly into clinical trials, which may already be underway. I haven't checked this week, but they, you know, I think that we all need to make sure when these new vaccines come out, these that have been experimental and we haven't used the technology before, that there isn't going to be a real problem with safety, and we don't even know with effectiveness. Unlike a traditional vaccine, RNA vaccines introduce an mRNA sequence, which is a molecule which tells cells what to build. It's encoded for a disease-specific antigen. Once produced within the body, the antigen is supposed to be recognized by the immune system, and a strong inflammatory response is mm-hmm. supposed to be produced to the antigen to fight, in this case, the coronavirus. So these messenger RNA vaccines are faster and cheaper to produce than traditional vaccines. And I think that this technology, the pharmaceutical industry very much wants to use to produce other vaccines. So this opportunity right now with this pandemic, which has been declared by the WHO this week as a pandemic, is certainly an opportunity for the pharmaceutical industry to fast-track this technology to licensure.
Oh, wow. So with something like this, a worldwide panic, just not to boil it down for the simple sake, isn't that a Freudian slip, of boiling it down, but that's probably trillions and trillions of dollars, because this is global. So
well, that's absolutely right. Whoever comes out with the first coronavirus vaccine, or the first few companies are going to, because there's one more point here that I think we need to understand, and Americans need to really clearly understand because it's not being talked about in the media. And I wrote an article that we published in the Vaccine Reaction Journal newspaper that MBIC publishes every week. And when I saw this article in the Military Times, I was shocked. And that is that at the beginning of February, an executive order was issued by the U.S. Department of Defense, including the Joint Chiefs of Staff, directing the U.S. Northern Command to implement the Department of Defense's global campaign plan for pandemic and infectious diseases. And orders were sent on February 12th to the U.S. Marine Corps and Navy, directing, quote, geographic combatant commanders to execute their pandemic plans in response to the coronavirus outbreak. And I'll read from what these combat commanders at the U.S. Marine Corps were told. They were told to, quote, review, update, and validate existing disease containment plans and policies in order to implement procedures for response, isolation, quarantine, and community-based intervention, and to, quote, become familiar with authority to declare a public health emergency, restrict movement, quarantine, and isolate, and coordinate with federal, state, local, and military treatment facilities and public health emergency officials. Now, the Navy and Marine Corps were directed to follow CDC guidance and comply with local public health authorities during this outbreak. That means that we have the military, at least two branches, being guided by the CDC. With regard to this outbreak. And I started to do some research on the law and found that this U.S. Northern Command was created under President Bush after 9/11. It basically represents all the different branches of the military to be used in response to an emergency. So the U.S. Northern Command has been involved in some responses like hurricanes, the floods, the massive oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, wildfires, etc. But in U.S. law, the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 prohibits the carte blanche use of military forces in civilian law enforcement in the U.S. In other words, The military is not supposed to be involved in the enforcement of civil laws. Now, the National Guard has been historically used, but that's a different kind of a branch of the military than the U.S. Marines, for sure. And so I was very concerned because it seemed to me that early on, before this had gotten to this country, there was at least thinking about potentially using the U.S. military on civilian soil. And I think this is a very serious step. So I'm not sure how this is going to end here. I think they've already been, I know the police were called into a university in Michigan where when they canceled classes in March Madness, this competition between basketball, right? I'm not a basketball person, so
Yes, it's March Madness, and I follow college. I mentioned it earlier in my monologue it's morphed over there. But, yeah, continue. It's a big deal. It's a very big deal. It's all the top colleges in the entire country, and it's worth billions of dollars. But continue.
I see. Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I mean, they did call in the police because there was rioting, and I just sense that there is this almost a desire to have draconian measures used to see how our population will react. You know, when you look at what they did in China, because the WHO has praised China for its measures. And if you look at what China did, they were hunting people down in the streets. They were boarding people up in their apartments. They were dragging people out out of the apartments at one point and putting them into large quarantine camps. They were killing people's pets. They were going around and clubbing to death people's pets because they thought that the coronavirus could infect animals, which has not been, it's not been shown that they are infecting pets. They were just taking these extreme measures. And I really, really hope that we're not going to see that kind of thing here because, you have to take a step back and say, is the response proportionate to the threat?
Some of the listeners are. By the way, folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Barbara Lowe Fisher, founder and president of the NVIC, National Vaccination Information Center, and she's an author and community and civil advocate as well. And we're just talking about the coronavirus and just some of the factoids surrounding it that we may not collectively have otherwise really stepped back and thought about, which is this coronavirus, as Ms. Barbara Lowe Fisher has talked about. Although it is a very serious in everything that we're being told and seeing of it, at this point, does it justify the response thus far? And so what we're actually talking about is some of the other things that have gone on that the public in mass is not aware of. And so let me just jump for just a moment. And Barbara, I've known you for years. Love the work you're doing. You're as much of a humanitarian as anyone that I've known. But I got to put you on the spot because you have got to come back. We only have about 10 more minutes, and I can see my numbers jumping up here and folks listening and tuning in. So I'm going to jump just a bit. And I want to say something that you and I talked about. I'm concerned that this virus, this morph of a virus, of a cold virus, a flu virus on steroids, it's not something that just hit. I'm saying that because as a nutritionist and naturopath, I had so many people with symptoms that were similar in terms of the respiratory impact, the longevity, the way that the virus seems to start in the system. Going back to December, it was like this spike, I mean a sudden spike in the very beginning of December. And folks, clients nationwide, have clients in California, in Nevada, in Florida, town Ohio, state Ohio, telling me the same symptoms. Barbara, the same mm-hmm. symptoms. It's a flu-like respiratory thing, and it's not your typical, you know, 7-day thing. It's a 2-week to 3-week scenario. So I'm wondering, is this related, or is it just something that this was just a season of respiratory type illnesses? What's your thought on that?
Well, I've had the same experience. I mean, I had an 8-week situation, 8 weeks, and it was like nothing like I'd ever had before. And I kept wondering. I ended up in urgent care and tested negative for influenza, but they thought maybe I had pneumonia. But it really went right into my lungs, and that was in December. But it took me 8 weeks. And it went away, and then it came back again. So it was like two stages. I've also talked with others in metropolitan areas particularly, and I was in the D.C. area at the time, but in New York, L.A., and I'm hearing the same thing. And, you know, 80% of – during the flu season, 80% of the respiratory infections are not influenza A or B. They are caused by other bacteria and viruses. So I hear what you're saying because I have had the same experience. Now, it could be that this coronavirus may have been in this country for far longer than what is being acknowledged. And the reason that I question it, and I don't know that. I mean, I'm just you know, talking about what mm-hmm. might be.
Sure.
But there certainly were planes flying all through November, December, January, and February, rather, part of January, anyway, from China in here before, you know, they were stopped. So certainly November, December, before it was identified. I don't think we're ever going to know, really, mm-hmm. because, again, they didn't start doing the testing. Testing was not done here. It still isn't being done here. There are healthcare workers who are begging for testing, nurses and others who have been exposed, and they cannot get tested. I don't understand it. That is the big question when you know, the debrief is done after this is all over, is going to be has to be an examination of what went wrong here.
So you've experienced this, and as I said, I've had this experience with myself, relatives around the country, and the symptoms are exactly the same.
Yeah.
I mean, identically the same. And that's not a coincidence. That's what I consider empirical.
I don't know. They call it anecdotal because certainly we can't, there's no, again, with no testing, I don't, they certainly, where I went, they wouldn't have, even though I tested negative for influenza, nothing, you know, wasn't further done. And at the time, I didn't even think of it. I certainly mm-hmm. expected to be over it before 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It was the strangest, most unusual respiratory infection I've ever had. And I have had pneumonia in my life, and I've also had pertussis in my life. So I know those two types of infections, and this was very odd. I honestly could see that if someone was in frail health, whether they were old or not, and they got a complication of this whatever I had, it would be serious. Because
mm-hmm.
it was, I mean, I got through it, and I'm fine, but I can see that some people may not be. And, you know, this is another thing where there hasn't been enough research done to identify the genetic and epigenetic factors that place some
some people at greater risk for having complications from different kinds of infections. That research just is really not being done, and it's not being done for vaccines either, because we're not all the same. We don't respond the same way to infections, and we don't respond the same way to vaccines that artificially manipulate the immune system, cause an inflammatory response in the body. And my concern really is that if they fast-track these vaccines because of this emergency situation and they don't do enough testing, that you could have unintended consequences, you could have a really serious situation. And will they be honest with us as to how serious that is in terms of the side effects? I would say from my experience with the other vaccines, the childhood vaccines that I've been trying to urge research to identify high-risk people, high-risk children, I would say that we won't be getting the truth, nothing but the truth, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as you said, and I'm still back on the article that you had published back in February around the 20th. You know, there was one sentence in there, and I looked it up, and I was just looking at it. I guess the thing that kind of throws me off, and it just makes me so suspect. It says the DOD, we know what that is, Defense Department, will continue to follow CDC.
I know.
And just those seven words, that's scary.
Well, it's unusual. I am really hoping that option is not exercised. But I see this ever-escalating call for a shutdown of our society, and I wonder how long Americans will tolerate that. You know, people are going to the stores. There's lines around the grocery stores. People are afraid. On one hand, we have the World Health Organization and the CDC up until now. And, you know, one day they would say there's no reason to be concerned. Then the next day we would have news that would really ratchet up the anxiety level. You can't blame people for being fearful and for being anxious and for doing things they wouldn't ordinarily do if they weren't so afraid. You can't blame them when every day you wake up and you see this horrible about how our society is deteriorating, our economy, people's 401ks, people's employment, businesses will be destroyed, especially small businesses.
When you tell me, go ahead, Barbara.
Well, I mean, it's heartbreaking, really, because how is that going to change the course? We now have messaging today that I think it was from a health official who said, maybe it was Dr. Fauci, who said, you know, there's going to be millions and millions of cases of this COVID-19. How does shutting down the whole society help?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. We
should be helping people
contagious.
Through this.
Mm-hmm.
We should be helping people through it. Anxiety and fear also damages the immune function.
Mm-hmm.
It causes
we talked
people
about
who
that.
Are already anxious to do things that are not mm-hmm. grounded in reality. You know, I'm disappointed in the way it's been handled, and we can only pray that cooler heads will prevail and we won't completely ruin our economy and ruin, you know, the social interactions we have with each other.
You know, a couple things. You said that this wasn't as serious as the MERS or SARS.
No, it wasn't. And if I can find here with among my papers here, the New England Journal of Medicine article that was published by Dr. Fauci and his colleagues, here it is, COVID-19 Navigating the Uncharted. And it was New England Journal of Medicine. And, quote, on the basis of a case definition requiring a diagnosis of pneumonia, the currently reported case fatality rate is approximately 2%. In another article, report fatality of 1.4% among 1,099 patients with laboratory-confirmed COVID. These patients had a wide spectrum of disease severity. If one assumes that the number of asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic cases is several times as high as the number of reported cases. The case fatality rate may be considerably less than 1%. This suggests that the overall clinical consequence of COVID-19 may ultimately be more akin to those of a severe seasonal influenza, which has a case fatality rate of approximately 0.1%, or a pandemic influenza, similar to the 1957 and 1968 outbreaks, rather than a disease similar to SARS or MERS, which have had case fatality rates of 9 to 10%, that would be SARS, and MERS, 36%, respectively.
Ooh, wow. You know, what you just said is very interesting, the mortality rate. So is it that this is more contagious? Because we went through the SARS, and it that didn't reach this proportion, did it not?
No, you're right. This appears to be very, very efficiently transmitted. It appears to be highly contagious. But according to Dr. Fauci, Clifford Lane, and Robert Redfield, that are at the Department of Health and Human Services, they did not anywhere compare the death rate of this COVID-19 to SARS or MERS, which were far more, had a much higher mortality rate. At least that's the way they see it now. Again, it looks as if there may be different strains, because Italy is having a very high death rate, 1,000 people already in the last few weeks who are dead, according to them. And what's so sad is I read yesterday that they are basically in hospitals saying don't treat the elderly. They are making, even though this is a
wow.
respiratory infection that is particularly risky for the elderly, they're saying they're going to have to ration who they're going to save, and they're not going to save the elderly. I was just stunned when I saw that.
Sounds a little genocidal to me. And I'm just saying that because, you know, there's been some documentation about certain parties that have stated that, you know, we need a population reduction. I've actually gone on the web and heard Bill Gates make similar statements. I'm just saying, this is just something that I've seen. Maybe it was manipulation of the video, but it makes you wonder about conspiracy theories when you hear things like that. And you hear about the elder being more vulnerable here and a high, you know, contagious rate and how it's transported at a higher rate.
The elderly, of course, their immune systems, many, not all, but they don't function as robustly as those who are younger. And right now, even though there have been some children who have been infected, by and large, everybody in every country is saying it's not the children who are having